networks of transmission of MRSA, methicillin resistant Staph aureus among MSM. I have nothing to disclose, at least not in front of you all, but if you treat me to happy hour later, there might be some other disclosures going on. Here's the title, the funky background, in case you're wondering what that is. It's actually not grapes, that's what MRSA looks like magnified. Currently, I am a postdoc fellow with UC San Francisco, the Center for AIDS Prevention Studies, but the data I'm going to be presenting on today comes from a project that I worked on back in my former life in New York when I worked with the Antibiotic Resistance Unit of the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. We love acronyms, right? Okay. So before really going into the current study and what we did, I want to give everyone a little background on what MRSA is. And before we can talk about that, just a quick background on Staph. Staph is just a very common bacteria. About a quarter to 30% of us carry it somewhere in our bodies, mostly in the nares of the nostrils. Most carriers don't have any kind of skin scores or infections. It can come and go. When you have the Staph present on your body, it's called being colonized. And it's usually not dangerous for otherwise healthy individuals. So if that's Staph, what's MRSA? MRSA is just Staph that is resistant to some commonly used antibiotics, such as methicillin, of course, that's the M, and penicillin and amoxicillin, above some others. It was first recognized in hospital settings back in the 1960s. It's usually treatable, although about a quarter to a third of us carry regular Staph, about 1% actually carry and are colonized with MRSA. And again, that's mainly in the nares of the nostrils and the skin. Again, more public health acronyms. Just to be super clear, CA-MRSA versus HA-MRSA. CA stands for community-associated, HA is hospital-associated. Sometimes you heard them called community-acquired or hospital-acquired. Community-associated MRSA has a history and is genetically distinct. It evolved independently of hospital-associated. Some people think it started off in the hospitals and then it popped into the community. It actually has its own genetic evolution that's independent. And it first became recognized in the 1980s. And over the years, with more surveillance coming on, we believe that it's becoming more and more common. So what do Staph infections look like when you have them? And just a quick note, the rest of the presentation is only going to focus on community-associated, not hospital. So these are what Staph infections look like when they manifest. Pimples, the abscess has a lovely little drip to it right there, impetigo, boils. So with that Staph, this is what MRSA looks like. Do y'all see the difference? One, there's Staph, there's MRSA, right? So how do you know the difference? The whole point of this is you can't tell visually. You have to have it cultured, which basically means you take some of that lovely pus or drainage from the abscess, send it into a lab, and then have it grown in the laboratory, and then they'll expose it to different kind of antibiotics to see what it's resistant to and what kills it off eventually. That's the only way to truly know the difference between a Staph infection and an MRSA infection. Sometimes it got sensationalized, like, oh, if it's an MRSA infection, it's going to be a lot more red, it's going to be progressing faster, it's a super bug. Really, it's just the way you treat it. Most infections, MRSA and Staph, can be just treated with an IND, which is an incision and drainage that should be done by a healthcare professional and not done at home, and we'll get to that, why that's important later on. Who gets MRSA? As you can see, pretty much anybody. If you're on a sports team, incarcerated individuals, school kids, people who go to the gym, people who go to the sauna, older people, younger people, people in medical settings, good-looking people, not-so-good-looking people, pretty much anybody can get MRSA. So what's the big deal? What facilitates transmission? To use public healthy terms, these would be the risk factors, right? So things like overcrowding, overuse of antimicrobials, frequent skin contact, shared items and surfaces that are contaminated, a lack of hygiene, so cleanliness is very important, and any kind of compromised skin can be a facilitator for transmission. So what's the big deal? Why are we talking about this crazy little bug and antibiotic resistance at the LGBT gay men session? So if you look, the article on the right was a deep article that came out in 2006. They basically concluded that among MSM populations, they had a larger emergence of this multi-resistant Staph aureus, MRSA. The top left, that is that little article, is the media took it, kind of spun it, sensationalized it as this new drug-resistant, inflicting gay communities, the new gay disease, the new gay superbug, and then there were a few more commentaries on it. From this initial article and the media coverage from it, the antibiotic resistance unit of the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene initiated a pilot study that was quantitative. We went to a local clinical laboratory, and we found all the reported MRSA cases and went back and surveyed those individuals. So from that initial quantitative pilot study, we found that of the men involved, over half had reported having had sex with another man in the past 6 months. Also, there were trends towards being HIV positive and trends with crystal meth use. Initially, before I came onto the study, the ARU, antibiotic resistance unit, was thinking it was something to do with injection drug use and slamming crystal because the use of the needles would compromise the skin integrity, and they thought that was some sort of the mechanism. Based on that, you're still with me? Okay, I talk fast, I know. The aims of what I'm actually going to talk about and why I think you actually came early to the session is to explore the mechanisms for MRSA transmission by understanding community behaviors, perceptions, and knowledge. Second aim was to examine the ways in which MRSA affected the lives of men who had contracted the infection, and then to also assess the role of public health practitioners in providing MRSA awareness and education to the community. So those were the aims. The methods, all qualitative. If this was heroin, this was just pure qualitative, good stuff. There were three interview types, focus groups. There were three focus groups with 8 men each, so a total of 24 men in the focus groups. Provider interviews, there were 6 clinicians from a local community health clinic, 2 health educators from a local AIDS service organization, and then 1 private physician. And then we did in-depth interviews with individuals who had MRSA. Recruitment, we went back to the original study and got some of the cases who were confirmed because we didn't want just self-report. We wanted to make sure that these guys actually had MRSA. Luckily, IRB at DOH allowed for that. We also did outreach at various venues in Manhattan. We had a little palm card, a little thing of sanitizer that sometimes people got confused for lube in the bar, which would not be very fun for those guys, so we'd be very explicit about that. Everyone had to screen in and be, had to call in and be screened. And then for the providers, we just used professional existing networks. So for those 13 MRSA individuals, you can see who was screened, about 100 individuals screened, who was eligible, and who was interviewed. HIV status wasn't used as a screener, but you can see about half, just over half of those interviewed, the 13, were HIV positive. They tended to be older, over 35. They tended to be white. That pretty much kind of matched what we were seeing in the quantitative. Just to draw your attention, if you see the eligible, there was actually 23, but just for various reasons, we were only able to just do the 13. Analysis, we did thematic analysis of all the transcripts, all the interviews were transcribed. For those of you who have never seen Atlas, here's a little screenshot of that. Findings, so here we go. The major finding was an association with PMP activities, so party and play. Also some MRSA misunderstandings, misperceptions, and home remedies gone wrong. And then the third is this notion of a stigma related to MRSA. This is a quote I used to end with as a bonus quote, but I tend to talk too much sometimes when I go through this data, so I find it helps just to put in the front and then deconstruct it backwards. This is a quote from a community health doctor at one of the clinics. He had the MRSA infection on the base of the shaft of his penis, and then another one in the groin, and then he had another one in the groin down there. I was sure it was going to be MRSA. So this just kind of this association of who gets MRSA. Same story, he did crystal over the weekend and left the cock ring on for way too long. So you have the crystal use, cock ring contaminated item, got a little pimple, on Sunday was a pimple, on Monday he lanced it himself. Home remedy's gone wrong. He got about half a cup of pus out, according to him. He comes to see me 3 days later, you know, with 3 gigantic abscesses. We do get those patients who need to go to the ER and they won't. I made him sign a release, my penis may fall off. So just this misunderstanding from the individuals of the severity of the infection and what it can do and the home treatments. And just to put it together, going back to the theme one, so that was just kind of putting it all in context. So what is it about meth use? So here's one participant. I think the first infection I got was about 6 years when I started doing crystal meth. I was having a lot of sexual encounters, and that's probably how I got it from somebody. That's how I got it, definitely from playing around. So, you know, we went into the study trying to figure out these mechanisms for transmission, but it was really about this sect of MSM who engage in party and play activities, because it's not so much the meth use in and of itself, because that does dry out the skin and can, you know, as we remember the slide from earlier, compromise skin integrity. It's the context of what goes on in a PMP session of multiple partners, lots of skin contact. The next quote adds more of the multiple risk. So if you're using rubber sheets, so contaminating items, it stays on. That's how I think I got this MRSA infection the most recent time. I was cleaning my rubber sheets and didn't have a bandage on the cut of my finger, and so it was an open sore. So compromised skin integrity, contaminated items, the rubber sheets. This one is a little interesting as well because he was HIV positive. Among those who were HIV positive, there was a lot of online hookups and a lot of sterile sorting going on. And because latex is not part of the equation, I started probing more and more about the types of lube being used. They didn't like to use the water-based. It's too gummy, even though it's easier to wash off. So for these individuals, they use more like grease and oil-based, which can clog the pores and actually facilitate MRSA transmission as well. And same thing with the silicone-based. They're harder to wash off. One guy was talking about how he used dish soap to wash off his silicone, which can totally dry out the skin and also make MRSA transmission more facilitated. Putting it all into context, this is what one guy called a typical weekend of a PMP session. I called up one guy, he called another, and it lasted for like 7 days, right? Typical weekend, 7 days. I think there was like a dozen people, multiple partners, lots of skin contact going on. I wasn't the only one with MRSA. One of the people from that weekend had to be hospitalized for it because he got it. I don't know if it was from me or if he already knew it. Here's another, so in addition to all the other reasons why it's interesting, I just want to call attention that even though these guys knew they had some sort of infection or something going on, they were still engaging in these PMP activities. So it's not so much like, one of my coworkers calls it a lack of conscience, but I'm not that, I'm not going to take it to that level, but it was, just really want you to think about the context of these PMP sessions, of what a typical weekend would be like. Home treatments, what do I have, like a minute? Three, okay. I gave pressure on both sides, they try to squeeze it, sometimes they say not to do that. He was talking about doctors and medical providers. So again, not really listening to the information that's being distributed. And all that infection came out just in the hot water there. It was just such a relief. It was the only way to ease the pain and get all the infection out with all that hot water burning in a drain. So basically this guy would talk about how he would use this scalding hot water to help get rid of the infection, and that he would later on talk about beach blasts, and that he would tell his friends that, yeah, beach blast, that's the best way to get rid of it, which again is just gonna totally compromise the skin integrity and make matters more worse than they could have been. Providers also saw the same thing. I would say most of the repeats I've seen in the last year have been really crazy skin regimens, taking a bath in alcohol, scrub their body twice a day with HIPAA cleanse, which is an antibiotic cleanser. Some guy was putting benzoyl peroxide all over his body. I think a lot of repeats that I've seen are just because people's skin integrity is just crap, and nobody gets told to moisturize, nobody. So it's just a lack of proper home treatment and a non-recognition to actually go to a provider and seek care when needed. Got it. Just more misunderstandings. This health educator from the AIDS Service Organization, basically kind of going off of the earlier article that I showed you, started to liken MRSA to an STI. And you know, even though there's a lot of skin contact going on, it's not necessarily a sexually transmitted infection. So just getting that information out to the providers who will then go out and be the front line to the community is important. Something interesting was seeing MRSA as a gay disease. This really came out a lot in the focus groups as well because of the media attention given as like the new gay disease. Here's a quote from one of the individuals. We gay men already have so much pushed on us. HIV, herpes, syphilis, drug use, alcoholism, the list goes on and on. The last thing we need is for the conservatives to have something else to throw at us. So it's just this notion that, you know, we have enough oppression from so many different levels, and now you're giving us this discriminatory marker as well as just another illness that's wrong with us. That's one even within the community. There was like a stigma in revolve to who gets MRSA, and people just unofficially knew, oh, it's the tweakers, right? So there were times when I used drugs and gone out and had sex with a couple of guys on the weekend. Somebody told me that they noticed it, the MRSA infections, with guys that use crystal meth. That might be an issue, I don't know, the doctor also told me that. So it's even the providers who are picking up that it is this subset of the population that is engaging in these PMP activities. As you remember from before, just in general, you can get, anyone can get MRSA, but it became a little bit more prevalent among this subset of MSM within New York City. Discussion, pretty much what I just said. I have 30 seconds, I'm sure. Limitations, totally not a representative sample. It was a very small sample size, disproportionate number of HIV positive. There's always issues with self-reporting. It was pure qualitative, like I mentioned, and just for various red tape in the New York City Department of Health, you know, we had some logistics to battle with. Recommendations for scholars just for future research to really delve in and to assess whether these themes hold true, not just for a New York population, but across. And then if you want to know the rest, just come talk to me after when I give you more disclosure. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Galindo.